Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag nochmals. Ich melde mich zurück zum zweiten Teil mit Professor Fjodor Lukjanow unserem Gespräch. Wir haben bereits ausführlich über den Krieg in der Ukraine gesprochen, über die Fragen, was da die russische Seite umtreibt, ob Putin ein Imperialist sei, ob es einen militärisch-industriellen Komplex gäbe in Russland, was eigentlich die tieferen Ursachen aus russischer Sicht dieses Konflikts sind, dieses Kriegs. Und ich kann Sie nur ermutigen, wenn Sie es noch nicht gesehen haben, schauen Sie sich das an. Ich möchte in einem zweiten Teil, wenn wir hier die Gelegenheit haben, noch etwas tiefer über die Person des Präsidenten und über die Einordnung von Wladimir Putin sprechen. So thank you for your time, Professor Lukjanow. It's so interesting. Now this, in the second part, we would like to focus a bit on the president, on this big snorting elephant in the middle of the room, this polarizing, probably most polarizing figure, probably together with Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is also an extremely polarizing figure, but I would say that President Putin is it even more. My first question, just relating to current events, this murder attempt against the President Trump. How did you see it? What was your reaction to it when you heard about it?
We heard a lot about the unprecedented level of civic hostilities and polarization in the United States. And frankly, many people in Russia expected something like this coming. Mm-hmm. Because we many of us expect something mm-hmm. bad coming in the United States or from the United States. Mm-hmm. So in this regard, it was in a way predictable that something will happen which would beef up, so mm-hmm. to say, this atmosphere. But the most interesting is, of course, whether this incident means that Donald Trump already actually got the presidency or
think?
Not.
You think it will? I mean, now he's a hero. I mean, that's what I read here when I see this murder attempt has turned him into a hero.
We know a little bit about American public atmosphere. People became heroes, then very soon another campaign starts that people became something else. But Donald Trump is, of course, one thing is absolutely undeniable. He's a brilliant political animal. The way how
his
he behaved, instincts are amazing, how he behaved
and
at
his
this
courage,
moment.
And his courage on the fire, how he reacted, I mean, and then with a lot of dignity in his first statements, I mean, probably it was a transformative event for him.
It may be.
And for the United States.
We will see whether campaign will continue as it was or differently. But interestingly, again, about this strange, for us, a strange nuance in the United States that the new event erases the previous one. Before that, everybody spoke about Biden's failure and debate. Yeah. Now it's out, so no one remembers that. People speak about that. I don't know. It looks like Trump improved his chances mm-hmm. enormously, mm-hmm. but who knows?
Yeah. Speaking about transformative events, President Putin, is he, in the Russian context, a transformative president, a transformative figure in Russian history?
He is, of course, because if we compare Russian situation both domestically and internationally 25 years ago when he was announced, it will be in August, 25 years since he was announced by then President Boris Yeltsin as not only the new prime minister but also his successor. and no one knew about this person. And I worked as a journalist at that time, and I remember that everybody asked each other, who is this guy? Is it our
the
next
spy,
president?
Who the is? Spy who came in yeah. from the cold.
Absolutely. And in this regard, of course, if we compare Russia then and Russia now, very big difference. You know, we can speak
but
hours.
What would we say was initially the greatest achievement of Vladimir Putin, what somehow justified him in the eyes of a majority of Russians? What was his greatest achievement at the beginning?
That is very easy to answer, because his achievement was that he stabilized the Russian state, Russian statehood. And
after the terrible 90s, where oligarchs ruled and the mafia was on the streets of Moscow?
Oligarchs, mafia, separatists in the Caucasus, all possible challenges from within, mostly. Mm-hmm. And in this regard, Putin, whoever would follow Yeltsin, would need to do this job, mm-hmm. because otherwise Russia would totally decline. Yeah. So Putin did it, I would say, in a very efficient and very smooth way, without bigger, without repressions, without bigger cataclysms. He just started to give sense of functionality to the Russian state, Russian apparatus. Of course, he was lucky that oil prices jumped just at that moment. But even this fortune could be wasted if not Putin did some things to concentrate oil production and oil revenues back in the hands of Russian state. Mm-hmm. Because before that, the biggest share went to private owners, to oligarchs. And Putin's contribution to the Russian stabilization in between, say, 2000 and 2008, his two first terms, was enormous. Mm-hmm. And I think that people still now appreciate it very much.
Mm-hmm. It is said that it is recognized that he stabilized the country. It is recognized that, of course, due to the national resources, the whole wealth of Russia, of the Russian citizen, went up. You see the development of the salaries. But they say he was not able to really produce a domestic sector, industrialization, and all of these huge shortcomings. I mean, if I look around in Moscow, it's a bit an opposite picture. You have the impression this is a booming city, the economy goes very well, but what do you say about this assessment? Did he somehow, are there shortcomings in this interior economic development?
No doubt about that. And I think to a large extent, the decision to profoundly change the whole development was the component of this, mm-hmm. not the main one, but the component of this was his conclusion that Russian economic and industrial development mm-hmm. after collapse of the Soviet Union did not produce this performance which he wanted, what he calls technological sovereignty. Mm-hmm. That Russia, after collapse of the Soviet Union, gained a lot, mm-hmm. but lost a lot mm-hmm. as well, technologies which were quite high mm-hmm. level in the Soviet Union, but the very fact that now we don't produce jets, mm-hmm. what Soviet Union mm-hmm. did, mm-hmm. and we used only Soviet mm-hmm. jets at mm-hmm. that time, mm-hmm. that's one illustration, for example. And in this regard, yes, initial idea which was shared by Putin was that in the environment, in the global environment, the globalization means that we can become part of that, we mm-hmm. can, so to say, make our contribution. Mm-hmm. Russia has so many different natural resources that it can actually contribute for a very long while to the international development. And in case of peaceful, globalized development, it would be fine. But since this period started to wane pretty soon, and I think Putin was sensitive enough to start to feel that atmosphere in the world is changing, not because of Russia, but because of many factors, that globalization as it was designed initially started to decline because those who launched this globalization, the powerful Western countries, started to feel some discomfort. That some other countries like China started to benefit from that more than they themselves. And that brought him probably to the idea that Russia needs to change the model of development. Whether it will be successful or not remains to be seen. There are many...
And how would you characterize Putin's leadership? What are the most important elements to understand this politician?
He's very patient. He doesn't like... he doesn't jump to conclusions. He never does anything which is...
we can make a little point.
he refuses to make anything which is publicly demanded. In this regard, he's an anti-populist. If people, if audience wants something, for example, fire a person who is considered to be a wrong position, he never does it. He can do it later when when people forget, but then... I think he believes, and probably rightly, that he has a feeling of the nation. He has a feeling what Russian people, average Russian people, wants to hear and wants to do.
What is his guiding ideology? Does he have an ideology? Does he have a philosophy? Like, for example, a Ronald Reagan, the American president, who said, well, the government is the problem, it's not the solution. He tried to minimize the public sector, or you take a Margaret Thatcher, very strong, principled politicians in the West. What is his guiding philosophy? What is his ideology? What does he believe in?
I think he has some strong views, but you cannot say that there is an ideology like Reagan's or Thatcher's. Of course, as any politician, he has some speeches with quotations from different Russian thinkers. But my understanding of Putin is that he is, of course, a pragmatic.
He's a conservative.
He's conservative, but you know, he's conservative not so much ideologically, but he's conservative in his behavior. Conservative as a person. He doesn't like big, quick changes and so on. Conservative ideologically, yes, probably, but you know, in our case, Russian history is so complicated that when you say conservatism here, you don't know exactly what you mean. Because some people who glorify the Soviet Union and the communism, they are called conservative here. Some people who say about Russian Empire, and so they are also conservative, and how you can reconcile those two conservatisms, no way. So in this regard, I don't think Putin is an ideological leader. He is a, he has a feeling, he has a certain vision, long-term vision, a picture, what kind of Russia he would like to see.
And what would you say does this picture look like? What is this ideal Russia?
His ideal Russia, of course, a strong country which plays important role in the world. Not a superpower, because age of superpower is over.
Superpower means super problems.
The only superpower remaining is the United States, and I think that in the next decades they will lose this status, and that will be good for them.
Yeah, yeah. And probably also for the world.
Probably also for the world, yeah.
Don't know yet.
So I think Putin really appreciates high living standard. He is not like ideologically driven guy who wants an idea to be implemented, whatever it costs. No. He certainly believes in the importance of material wealth. And actually, if you look now at his speeches, big speeches, he speaks all the time about development, how to develop the country and so. And probably if we would like to formulate his dream in one word, dream about Russia, I would dare to say that it will be the word resilience. Resilient country, resilient against all possible challenges, be it from without or from within.
Yeah. Is he a Democrat?
Not necessarily.
This is a mystery. I talked to a lot of Russians about, you know, what is the system of Russia? And they said, this is an autocracy, it's a dictatorship, it's a democracy. And then one journalist from Russia Today, RT, said to me, well, you know, I watched the television debate between Trump and Biden. This is the best democracy of the world. And then if you end up with Biden, whatever you call our system, I'm glad we have Putin and not Biden. But how will you describe the Russian system, the system of Putin's power? Is it a dictatorship? They say it's a dictatorship. It's even a totalitarian, semi-totalitarian dictatorship. That's what prestigious newspapers in England write.
I know. Certainly not a dictatorship, because, you know, when people start to use such strong words, they probably forget what the real dictatorship is. Mm-hmm. So we had experience in our history. We had Stalin time. Stalin was a real dictator. Mm-hmm. With the respective consequences. Mm-hmm. Even the later stage of the Soviet Union, especially what I remember, I was born during Brezhnev time, so I remember that. I wouldn't call it dictatorship. It was already much, much softer. In our case, it has nothing to do with dictatorship. It is autocracy. I would not try to pretend as mm-hmm. if there is a liberal democracy, not at all. There is an autocracy based on the authority of very strong, respected leader. Mm-hmm. It has pluses and minuses, of course, this kind of system. Pluses, that leader, be it Putin or maybe another person, if it will emerge at some point, of course, the capacity to do things might be higher than in democratic societies, which struggle all the time inside, and any decision cannot be implemented soon. So this is probably what we see in many cases in the world, mm-hmm. that even democratic systems turn towards stronger leadership. Mm-hmm. Look at India, for example. Mm-hmm. There is a democracy, no doubt about that, but democracy with the increasingly strong personality at the top. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think the limits of this system are already inside. So because as long as we have such leader, whether we like it or not, but he is still enjoying mm-hmm. huge support in the mm-hmm. population. But
What comes next?
Yeah, the system is very much person-driven.
Tailor-made for one very strong and...
Yeah, and this is not yet, not now. Now he was elected again for 6 years, and he's very active. But sooner or later we will face this dilemma. What after very strong and very colorful leader? That's obvious.
I will talk about this dilemma shortly. I was coming from Switzerland. Switzerland is a very small country, and I would say we totally lack the imagination of what does it mean to rule a country like Russia on 11 time zones. I mean, it's an absurdly big country. It's unimaginable we have 3 hours. With 3 hours, you come from one border to the other. Switzerland is the opposite of Russia. It's so small. Russia is so big. Actually, how do you rule a country like Russia? What does it take? I mean, what does a Russian leader think about a day in, day out?
That's a question which I cannot answer because I was never
I would guess he thinks about how to keep this whole country together. When you saw the weak leadership in the 90s, you alluded to them, to these times, there was a disintegration of Russia. I mean, it was like parts of Russia were hijacked by local leaders. It was falling apart. You had the nuclear arsenal, probably not under control anymore. So that was the result of weak leadership at the center. So you brought back a strong leader. Nobody knew before, but he proved himself to be a strong leader. How to hold this together? I mean, is that the crucial quality a Russian president must have to project also this image of unfailable strength?
First of all, I would slightly disagree about 1990s. I wouldn't say it was a weak leadership. Leadership was different, and it's difficult to compare what we had after collapse of the Soviet Union, and this impulse of destruction was so strong that if Putin would come at that point, I'm not sure he would be as successful as he was later. As for how to govern this country, I have no idea. I don't think it's possible.
I had a discussion with Vladimir Solovyov about this, and I brought him my theory. I said, I feel sorry sometimes about Putin, because I think, this guy, he works now for 24 years, every day, probably 20 hours a day. He has to work. He has no normal life. Now he's the scapegoat for all the evils on the world. In the West, it almost requires a extreme amount of dedication. In Switzerland, our politicians change. The system is very strong. The institutions are strong. Are the institutions of Russia so weak that you need to have this strong individual at the center holding everything together?
I don't think. First of all, I don't think you need to feel sorry about Putin. I guess he enjoys this life. That's exactly what he wanted. As for institutions are weak. I would even say weaker now than they used to be 15 or 20 years ago. That's a backside of a strong leader. The stronger leader, the less demand for strong institutions.
Is Putin himself undermining these institutions, or are the institutions loosening muscle because he is so strong? It's more like a question of an erosion due to the fact that he's a strong leader, or is he actually actively undermining, as for example President Yeltsin? He used tanks against the Duma. He was also undermining the power of some institutions at the time.
He tried to destroy institutions inherited from the previous time to replace them with others. I don't think that Putin purposely undermines, but yes, it's more correct to say that his personality per se is such that it doesn't preclude existence of strong institutions. Mm-hmm. Which is fine as long as we have such a leader, which will be less fine afterwards, and probably we will need to address this problem seriously. But coming back to the question about how to rule this country, that's the guarantee against dictatorship we discussed earlier, because to install dictatorship in this country, the only way is what Stalin and Bolsheviks did, to spill as as much blood as possible. Mm-hmm. Then you can, for a while, establish a dictatorship which will collapse anyway soon. So, thanks God, Putin is far from this.
Put him in the long list of Russian leaders? I mean, in this beginning with like Ivan, the so-called the terrible Ivan Grozny, till today, what kind of leader is Russia? What kind of leader is Putin? Is he comparable? Do you see other personalities in the long Russian history he reminds you of?
You know, it seems that he himself would love to be compared to Katerina the Great.
That's why he had a good relationship to Angela Merkel.
Yeah, probably. But the main thing is that Katerina the Great has a reputation in Russian history of being relatively peaceful, pretty successful in strengthening and enhancing the country, but at the same time to give impetus for development. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what Putin would like to see as his heritage, his legacy. Mm-hmm. I would not compare him to persons who normally appear in the West, Ivan the Terrible, or Peter the Great. Yeah, no. Rather, some of Russian tsars in 19th century, like Nikolai I or Alexander III, especially Alexander III, who wanted to give stability and peace. Mm-hmm. And he was actually very much pro-great power, but suffering too much for mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Putin would consider himself as a leader who wants a great powerness to any yeah. cost.
In what sense is Putin the continuation of the Russian history, and in what sense is he probably a discontinuation, a disruptive element, or something totally new in Russian history?
No, I don't think he's totally new. I would rather see him as a very logical continuation of Russian history, but Russian history is extremely zigzag wise. And in this regard, you can identify some elements and his behavior and his political thinking, which can go back to the pre-imperial time, mm-hmm. this medieval Russia, these princes who mm-hmm. basically created the Moscovite mm-hmm. State before it, mm-hmm. it turned to be a bigger empire, before Ivan the Terrible. Also, as I said, some elements of 19th century Russian mm-hmm. rulers. And of course, he is—he's a Soviet person. He grew up.
And what's his relationship to the Soviet Union? I mean, does he have a? Does he detest? Does he say, "Well, the Bolsheviks have been a huge aberration of our history. It was terrible what Lenin and Stalin did." What is his relationship to this period of Russian history?
He never said that it was an aberration. Mm-hmm. I think he is very much opposite to this idea that history has right and wrong sides. Mm-hmm. History is very consistent mm-hmm. and integral. But in general, if you listen, especially in this context of Ukrainian conflict, he's very critical about the Soviet time. Starting from Lenin and then all rulers, he believes that they created this problem mm-hmm. with Ukraine and with mm-hmm. other territories mm-hmm. Russia lost after collapse of the Soviet Union. I wouldn't say he has any kind of nostalgia for the Soviet Union. Yeah. He used this famous phrase once rephrasing, I don't remember whom, Willy Brandt or anybody, those who don't mourn the Soviet Union, they have no heart. Those who are nostalgic about Soviet Union, they have no brain.
Okay.
And in this regard, I think this is exactly, yeah. He sees it as his motherland, but he's not a big fan of the Soviet system.
He's a romantic, Bolshevik, romantic.
No.
What is that, we're ending, we're approaching the end, I don't want to take so much time from you, but what is the driver of his foreign policy? I mean, we talked about the motivation, I mean, the criticism, he's an imperialist and everything. What would you say is the actual driver of the foreign policy of President Putin?
I think his initial driver, which he explicitly wrote and said at the very beginning of his presidency, many, many years ago, was to prevent the risk for Russia to become a second or third rate power. Russia should be part of the Premier League of international politics, and that was, from my point of view, the leitmotif of his policy, starting from the beginning until maybe mid last decade, until the Syrian intervention. And by doing that, Russia came back to the international highest level of international arena as an important power. Now, that's the question. That's the question. I don't have a clear answer. I think, coming back to what I said before, I think he wants Russia to be not necessarily the leading power in the world, among them, but not the main one, but the most resilient.
We talked about the arguments against Putin being an imperialist. I have one argument. What do you think about it? I once checked the military expenditure of Russia, and they compared it to the military expenditure of Nazi Germany in the 30s, which was considered, of course, an imperialist, aggressive country. And if you look at the expenditure for the military, it was in Germany 1935, it was like 8% of GDP. 39, it went up to 23% of GDP, then up 40, the same development in Italy with Mussolini. And if you look at the amount of money Putin is spending for the military, actually you can say in the Ukraine war, after 2016, after the Minsk agreements, he lowered the GDP percentage of the military expenditures, which would mean that if he was an imperialist, he would be the worst prepared imperialist in the history of imperialists because he neglected the military expenditure.
That's true. I think you're absolutely right. If Putin would be a real imperialist and expansionist, he would first of all launch a very massive pro-war propaganda. And which is not the case.
Yeah.
I know that in the West people believe that there is the case, but it is not the case. Secondly, he would call total mobilization or big mobilization, which is not the case at all. More than that, I think that he understands that Russian society is not up to that. And so far, at least, we see different means how to call people. And yes, indeed, the military expenditures would be much higher.
Right.
At least the dynamics would be different. Yeah. It is increasing now, but compared to needs, it's still very, very modest. So again, I'm absolutely sure that it's not about imperialism. It's a simply wrong framework to understand.
I mean, there are professors, for example, John Mearsheimer. He says he's actually coming out of the strategic defense. Countering the expansion of NATO. What is the most annoying misunderstanding about your president that you encounter when you look at Western commentaries about Western analysis. What's the most annoying misunderstanding about?
The most annoying misunderstanding, which we initially believed was war propaganda, but now I see that it probably is something which people in the West really think, and that's very wrong, is that Putin is a crazy, irrational adventurer.
And also a war criminal. I mean, killing babies in a hospital and deporting children from the eastern part of Ukraine.
This is war propaganda. It's fine. So every side tries to.
But it's very strong. I mean, it's very strong in our media. This is basically their excuse for not having any diplomacy anymore.
Yeah, I see. but the main thing is that this war, this situation, this political environment vis-a-vis Russia has been turned into purely moral dimension.
Like a crusade.
Crusade or not, but if you think in moral terms, then of course you cannot foresee any compromises because it cannot be a compromise with evil or this devil and so on. And that's a deadlock, and that's what Viktor Orban is trying to destroy.
I would say the most annoying misunderstanding, if it's a misunderstanding, or the most annoying perception. Let's put it this way: the most dangerous perception at the moment of President Putin is that he really is up there, you know, like on the ranking of the bad guys. I mean, they even compare him to Hitler. I mean, this is what they do. But this can turn into an issue when your president is vilified, at least in the United States and in Europe, in this sense. How do you address this problem? Do you think President Putin does a good job in selling himself and Russia to the world audience?
You know, the problem is that he he doesn't do this job at all, because probably he doesn't believe it's important. He believes that if he does right things from his point of view, then sooner or later people will understand. I'm not sure it will happen, but that's exactly what he's trying to do.
What is his biggest shortcoming in your eyes? If Putin would sit here and you have a candid conversation, what would you say him? What he should do better?
I wouldn't try to teach the president about his job. I would ask a couple of questions about the situation before the special military operation started, and why
he took
several things which they assumed were right turned to be wrong.
I mean, he's now in power for 24 years. One says power corrupts, long power has a corroding effect on your personality. What is your observation there? I mean, you follow his presidency, you know, since 24 years. He has been all there all the time. Do you see any changes in his behavior, in his personality? Does somehow the power has a corroding effect, or does it produce arrogance, you know, these negative effects?
I wouldn't say corroding effects, at least not what I see. I think the problem is that several things, especially vis-a-vis the West, several things which he tried to do turned to be unanswered. And he accumulated a very significant amount of disappointment. And you feel it in his speeches, in his behavior now, which is very much understandable.
The bitterness.
Bitterness, yeah, which is understandable, but probably not the very best thing which the leader of such a country would have. And of course, he is probably the most experienced leader in the world now. Not the longest serving, because, for example, President Lukashenko turned 30 recently in his position. But Putin went through basically everything which a leader of a country could go through. And in this regard, big, huge experience produces, produces wisdom and skills. At the same time, I don't know whether it can be applied to him or not, but any long-serving person starts to lose some freshness of perception.
And what would you say is his actually biggest quality? What would you say? I know one should never ask a professor, what do you admire? Because as a professor, you are a trained skeptic. You have to question everything. So I will phrase it differently. Yeah, what would you say analytically is the is most his overarching quality? What would you think is really it's his number one quality?
I think he's very he's strong. When I say strong, I mean that he is able to resist many things coming from the outside, including to step over misships and failures. And this is another side of a big experience. Mm-hmm. And of course, when I say about resilience, which he believes is the best, is the most important virtue for Russia, I think that can be applied to him as well. He is a very resilient person.
Resilient person. And what was his biggest mistake? Deficit?
I think it's not mistake or deficit. It's about again about the period in power
and the institutional situation.
Yes,
probably,
I think
he tolerates the decay of some institutional frameworks.
He is too strong to believe that other means should be established. And again, as long as he is in power, it's fine. But sooner or later, probably at the point, I don't know when and whether it will come, he will decide that he should prepare it for a change. Then probably he will try to transform the system internally.
Do you think he has a plan for his retirement?
I mean,
that he thinks... I mean, this could be a deficit as well. I mean, if you're the CEO of a company, okay. I mean, if you're called Picasso, you hold your instrument till you die. Or Woody Allen, he still makes movies until he falls into the grave. But if you're the president of a country with 150 million people of this importance, you shouldn't rule till your last day of your life. So. I mean, is there a certain, what do you say, is there a certain degree of cluelessness on the side of Putin that even himself, he does not know what comes after him?
You know, I don't believe he is the person who wants to rule until the last day of his life. Certainly not. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm almost sure that for now he has no plans at all to resign or to prepare a design for after him. Mm-hmm. He simply believes that he has very important tasks to complete, and the most important one is Ukrainian issue.
Which will dominate his presidency in the coming years.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are you afraid of the future of Russia? If you look into the future, say, well, now we have this President Putin, but he's not 45 anymore. He's an elderly man, still in very good shape. That's what they tell me. He's training 7 days a week. He's still in, I think, in a very good physical condition. But still, you know, he's like the eternal president. How do you look at this long period and a bit over it? Do you have sorrows? Do you think, my goodness, what comes after it? Does Russia fall into terrible times, into there is an expression in Russian about these times, mm-hmm. you know, when Ivan the Terrible mm-hmm. died, or even in the 90s, they were
chaos,
a bit the chaotic times. What do you think?
Frankly, I'm not afraid of this. I don't know why, because there are some reasons to believe that such risk exists, but I'm not afraid. I mm-hmm. think that in one or another way it will be settled. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of something else, actually, which is not which is connected to Russia, but not only to Russia. I'm afraid that the international development at large might turn into something pretty unguided because of numerous contradictions everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe, as a person who tries to analyze international relations, I don't believe that we will see another world order anytime soon, in any foreseeable future, order. Because we tend to believe that previous order has gone, but the next will come. I don't see principles and modes how this order can emerge. From my point of view, the next years or even decades will be anarchic development, which is not which doesn't mean necessarily a big war, but a lot of all possible turbulences. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
Probably there are two conflicting models now on this planet. There is one model which reminds me of the 19th century, which was the model of the balance of power, of sovereign states respecting their mutual sovereignty, not interfering into internal affairs. I would say this is the model of China, of Russia. And then you have another model, it's the American model, it's called the rule-based model. And the rule-based model means that you don't accept another country if it has a different government style than you have, which is like the model democracy versus mm-hmm. autocracy. And the question is, which model will prevail? When I talked to Henry Kissinger 18 years ago in his office in New York, he said, we are entering the 19th century again, this period, you know, of mutual sovereignties, a multipolar world would be the new term. Who will win this competition? Will the unilateral American rule-based model, the rules by the Americans, of course, will this model prevail? Or will there be this, you could say, more 19th century kind of multilateral, multipolar model prevail? What's your view?
Certainly not the option of unipolar rules-based order. I think it's over. Mm-hmm. It's simply impossible. Mm-hmm. United States had the best chance to establish that, mm-hmm. but even this country, enormously mighty, mm-hmm. they could not do it. As for parallels, I think all parallels are misleading. It's not 19th century, it's not 17th century. Another model, by the way, 30 years world and war, mm-hmm. and then
the Westphalian peace order
system. Yeah, I think we will see elements of everything.
Yeah,
and again, what I deeply believe, because the multipolar order is not an order; mm-hmm. it's just an environment.
It's a jungle.
Is it a jungle or whatever? But it's not. It's not an order.
It's international anarchy. It's controlled anarchy in the best case.
Controlled or not controlled, you never know. Mm-hmm. So you don't know how it will evolve. Mm-hmm. And I guess that countries, when they start to understand that there are no that there is no hierarchy as before, they will start to behave in a much more responsible way, because they will understand all risks. Yeah.
So probably it's that the international order has the same problem as the Russian interior order, since the United States have been so dominant, the international institutions decayed a little bit, and so all delegated the responsibility to the United States, especially in Europe. They got rid of their armies, now they're panicking. So probably, we're coming back to more a sane situation, we will see. I mean, thank you very much for this conversation. I have a very, very last question, which brings me back to a perception at the moment many people have in Europe, in Switzerland, in the West, you know, because there is so much propaganda all around us. And the perception is Russia, of course, is an autocracy or a dictatorship, and it's a very tough life. And if you are an intellectual, if you are a journalist, there are very close red lines, and if you overstep them, you end up in hell. And it's mind control, whatever you imagine. Can you give us here your personal view? How is it to be an intellectual in Russia these days, in times of the war, where probably also Putin has a bit pulled the screws? You know, it's probably a bit more difficult situation. Also in the West, I mean, it's not as free as it was like 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Yeah, how is it to live as an intellectual in Russia?
As far as the hell is concerned, so many of us will end up there, no doubt about that.
Whatever we do in life, you mean?
Yeah, not necessarily because of our political views, but other reasons. Of course, the current environment is much more demanding and much less open than it used to be. I see it here, I see it in the West. That's a question where limitations are stricter. In Russian case, we have more of formal limitations. In Western case, much more of informal but very strict limitations. That's not easy. I think that what I am trying to do, I don't insist. I'm extremely free because it's arrogant to say. But what I'm trying to do is to try to take distance and to look at what is happening a little bit from the outside, be it our situation or European or American or Chinese, whatever. Because I think that the most simplistic way is to try to subscribe everything what is happening to particular persons, be it Putin, be it Trump, be it Biden, be it whatever, who else. I grew up in the Soviet Union, and both school and university, we still studied Marxism. And Marxism has one advantage. It gives a big integral picture.
A structural picture.
And I think that it's what, not necessarily the Marxist view, but the structural picture is very much needed now again.
We talked about a lot of gloomy topics at the very end of this conversation. What's the beam of light? What is for you the silver lining on the end of the horizon in these times?
You know, the silver lining is very simple. I say it to all my students when they come to the first class. I say that whatever we think about human beings, about citizens, about persons, but as professionals dealing with international relations, that's absolutely golden time for us, because not every generation of foreign policy specialists could watch how history is being done in smartphones. That's enormous privilege.
Most interesting times, but also dangerous times. Professor Lukyanov, many thanks for this long conversation, very enlightening conversation. Meine Damen und Herren, wir sind hier, wir haben die Zeit massiv überzogen, aber es war so interessant, so lehrreich. Ich hoffe, Sie sind uns bis hierhin gefolgt. Ich danke Ihnen ganz herzlich, melde mich zurück und many thanks again. Vielen Dank abermals, Herr Professor Lukyanov. Das war sehr interessant und auch ein Privileg, so viel von Ihrer kostbaren Zeit hier haben zu dürfen.